him his health. If the old man had been stung by a manticore or bitten by a werewolf, Triss would have accepted that she had been summoned to aid him. But aching bones was a joke. For an ache in his bones, not a very original complaint within the horrendously cold walls of Caer Morhen, Vesemir could have treated with a witch's elixir, or an even simpler solution, with strong rye vodka, applied internally and externally in equal proportions. He didn't need a magician with her spells, filters and amulets. So who had summoned her? Geralt? Triss thrashed about in the bedclothes, feeling a wave of heat come over her, and a wave of arousal, made all the stronger by anger. She swore quietly, kicked her quilt away, and rolled onto her side. The ancient bedstead squeaked and creaked. "I've no control over myself," she thought. "I'm behaving like a stupid adolescent, or even worse, like an old maid deprived of affection. I can't even think logically." She swore again. Of course it wasn't Geralt. "Don't get excited, little one. Don't get excited. Just think of his expression in the stable. You've seen expressions like that before. You've seen them, so don't kid yourself. The foolish, contrite, embarrassed expressions of men who want to forget, who regret, who don't want to remember what happened, don't want to go back to what has been. By all the gods, little one, don't fool yourself it's different this time. It's never different, and you know it, because, after all, you've had a fair amount of experience." As far as her erotic life was concerned, Triss Merigold had the right to consider herself a typical enchantress. It had begun with the sour taste of forbidden fruit, made all the more exciting by the strict rules of the academy and the prohibitions of the mistress under whom she practiced. Then came her independence, freedom, and a crazy promiscuity which ended, as it usually does, in bitterness, disillusionment, and resignation. Then, following a long period of loneliness and the discovery that if she wanted to release her tension and stress, then someone who wanted to consider himself her lord and master, as soon as he had turned on his back and wiped the sweat from his brow, was entirely superfluous. There were far less troublesome ways of calming her nerves, ones with the additional advantages of not staining her towels with blood, not passing wind under the quilt, and not demanding breakfast. That was followed by a short-lived and entertaining fascination with the same sex, which ended in the conclusion that soiling towels, passing wind, and greediness were by no means exclusively male attributes. Finally, like all but a few magicians, Triss moved to affairs with other wizards, which proved sporadic and frustrating in their cold, technical and almost ritual course. Then, Geralt of Rivia appeared, a witcher leading a stormy life and tied to her good friend Yennefer in a strange, turbulent and almost violent relationship. Triss had watched them both, and was jealous, even though it seemed there was little to be jealous of. Their relationship quite obviously made them both unhappy, had led straight to destruction, pain, and yet, against all logic, it had lasted. Triss couldn't understand it, and it had fascinated her. It had fascinated her to such an extent that she had seduced the Witcher, with the help of a little magic. She had hit on a propitious moment, a moment when he and Yennefer had scratched at each other's eyes yet again and had abruptly parted. Geralt had needed warmth, and had wanted to forget. No, Triss had not desired to take him away from Yennefer. As a matter of fact, her friend was more important to her than he was. But her brief relationship with the Witcher had not disappointed. She had found what she was looking for. Emotions in the form of guilt, anxiety and pain. His pain. She had experienced his emotions, it had excited her, and when they parted, she had been unable to forget it. And she had only recently understood what pain is, the moment when she had overwhelmingly wanted to be with him again. For a short while, just for a moment, to be with him. And now she was so close. Triss clenched her fist and punched the pillow. "No," she thought. "No, don't be silly. Don't think about it. Think about Ciri. Is she?" Yes. She was the real reason behind her visit to Caer Morhen. The ash-blonde girl, who here in Caer Morhen they wanted to turn into a witcher. A real witcher. A mutant. A killing machine like themselves. "It's clear," she suddenly thought. feeling a passionate arousal of an entirely different nature. It's obvious. They want to mutate the child, subject her to the trial of grasses and changes. But they don't know how to do it. Vesemir was the only witcher left from the previous generation, and he was only a fencing instructor. The laboratorium, hidden in the vaults of Caer Morhen, with its dusty demijohns of elixirs, the alembics, ovens and retorts. None of the witchers knew how to use them. The mutagenic elixirs had been concocted by some renegade wizard in the distant past, and then perfected over the years by the wizard's successors, who had, over the years, magically controlled the process of changes to which children were subjected. At a vital moment, the chain had snapped. There was no more magical knowledge or power. The witchers had the herbs and grasses. They had the laboratorium. They knew the recipe. But they had no wizard. Who knows? She thought. Perhaps they have tried. Have they given children concoctions prepared without the use of magic? She shuddered at the thought of what might have happened to those children. And now they want to mutate the girl, but can't. And that might mean... They may ask me to help. And then I'll see something no living wizard has seen. I'll learn something no living wizard has learned. Their famous grasses and herbs, the secret virus cultures, the renowned mysterious recipes. And I will be the one to give the child a number of elixirs who will watch the changes of mutation, who will watch with my own eyes. Watch the ashen-haired child die. Oh, no. Triss shuddered again. Never. Not at such a price. Besides, she thought, I've probably got excited too soon again. That's probably not what this is about. We talked over supper, gossiped about this and that. I tried to guide the conversation to the child's surprise several times to no avail. They changed the subject at once. She had watched them. Vesemir had been tense and troubled, Geralt uneasy, Lambert and Eskil falsely merry and talkative, Cohen so natural as to be unnatural. The only one who had been sincere and open was Ciri, rosy-cheeked from the cold, dishevelled, happy and devilishly voracious. They had eaten beer pottage, thick with croutons and cheese, and Ciri had been surprised they had not served mushrooms as well. They had drunk cider, but the girl had been given water, and was clearly both astonished and revolted by it. "Where's the salad?" she had yelled, and Lambert had rebuked her sharply and ordered her to take her elbows off the table. Mushrooms and salad. In December? Of course, thought Triss. They're feeding her those legendary cave saprophytes, a mountain plant unknown to science, giving her the famous infusions of their mysterious herbs to drink. The girl is developing quickly, is acquiring a witch's infernal fitness. Naturally, without the mutation, without the risk, without the hormonal upheaval. But the magician must not know this. It is to be kept a secret from the magician. They aren't going to tell me anything. They aren't going to show me anything. I saw how that girl ran. I saw how she danced on the beam with her sword, agile and swift, full of a dancer's near feline grace, moving like an acrobat. I must, she thought. I absolutely must see her body. See how she's developing under the influence of whatever it is they're feeding her. And what if I managed to steal samples of these mushrooms and salads and take them away? Well, well. And trust? I don't give a fig for your trust, witches. There's cancer out there in the world. Smallpox, tetanus and leukemia. There are allergies. There's cot death. And you're keeping your mushrooms, which could perhaps be distilled and turned into life-saving medicines, hidden away from the world. You're keeping them a secret, even from me, and others to whom you declare your friendship, respect and trust. Even I'm forbidden to see not just the laboratorium, but even the bloody mushrooms. So why did you bring me here? Me, a magician. Magic. Triss giggled. Ha, she thought. Witches, I've got you. Ciri scared you just as she did me. She withdrew into a daydream, started to prophesy, gave out an aura which, after all, you can sense almost as well as I can. she automatically reached for something psychokinetically, or bent a pewter spoon with her wheel as she stared at it during lunch. She answered questions you only thought, and maybe even some which you were afraid to ask yourselves. And you felt fear. You realized that your surprise is more surprising than you had imagined. You realized that you have the source in Caer Morhen, and that you can't manage without a magician. And you don't have a single friendly magician, not a single one you could trust, apart from me and Yennefer. The wind howled, banged the shutter, and swelled the tapestry. Triss rolled onto her back, and, lost in thought, started to bite her thumbnail. Geralt had not invited Yennefer. He had invited her.
Does that mean... Who knows? Maybe. But if it's as I think, then why... Why?
Why hasn't he come to me?
She shouted quietly into the darkness, angry and aroused. She was answered by the wind howling amidst the ruins. The morning was sunny but devilishly cold. Triss woke, chilled through and through, without having had enough sleep, but finally assured and decided. She was the last to go down to the hall. She accepted the tribute of gazes which rewarded her efforts. She had changed her travel clothes for an attractive but simple dress, and had skillfully applied magical scents and non-magical but incredibly expensive cosmetics. She ate her porridge chatting with the witchers about unimportant and trivial matters.
"Water again,"
muttered Ciri suddenly, peering into her tumbler.
"My teeth go numb when I drink water. I want some juice, that blue one."
"Don't slouch," said Lambert, stealing a glance at Triss from the corner of his eye. "And don't wipe your mouth with your sleeve. Finish your food. It's time for training. The days are getting shorter."
"Geralt,"
Triss finished her porridge,
"Ciri fell on the trail yesterday. Nothing serious, but it was because of that jester's outfit she wears. It all fits so badly and it hinders her movements."
Vesemir cleared his throat and turned his eyes away.
"Aha,"
thought the enchantress.
"So it's your work, Master of the Sword."
Predictable enough, Ciri's short tunic does look as if it has been cut out with a knife and sewn together with an arrowhead.
"The days are indeed getting shorter," she continued, not waiting for a comment. "But we're going to make today shorter still. Ciri, have you finished? Come with me, if you please. We shall make some vital adjustments to your uniform."
"She's been running around in this for a year, Merigold," said Lambert angrily. "And everything was fine until
a woman arrived who can't bear to look at clothes in poor taste which don't fit."
"You're right, Lambert. But a woman has arrived, and the old order's collapsed, a time of great change has arrived.
Come on, Ciri."
The girl hesitated, looked at Geralt. Geralt nodded his agreement and smiled, pleasantly, just as he had smiled in the past when... Triss turned her eyes away. His smile was not for her. Ciri's little room was a faithful replica of the witcher's quarters. It was, like theirs, devoid of almost all fittings and furniture. There was practically nothing there beside a few planks nailed together to form a bed, a stool, and a trunk. Witchers decorated the walls and doors of their quarters with the skins of animals they killed when hunting. Stags, lynx, wolves, and even wolverines. On the door of Ciri's little room, however, hung the skin of an enormous rat with a hideous scaly tail. Triss fought back her desire to tear the stinking abomination down and throw it out of the window. The girl, standing by the bed, stared at her expectantly.
"We'll try," said the enchantress, "to make this sheath fit a little better. I've always had a knack for cutting and sewing, so I ought to be able to manage this goatskin too. And you, little witcher girl, have you ever had a needle in your hand? Have you been taught anything other than making holes with a sword in sacks of straw?"
"When I was in Transriver, in Kagan, I had to spin," muttered Ciri unwillingly. "They didn't give me any sewing, because I only spoilt the linen and wasted thread. They had to undo everything. The spinning was terribly boring. Yuck!"
"True," giggled Triss. "It's hard to find anything more boring. I hated spinning too."
"And did you have to?"
"I did, because
But you're a magician. You can conjure anything up. That amazing dress. Did you conjure it up?
No. Triss smiled. Nor did I sew it myself. I'm not that talented.
And my clothes? How are you going to make them? Conjure them up?
There's no need. A magic needle is enough. One which we shall charm into working more vigorously. And if there's a need...
Triss slowly ran her hand across the torn hole in the sleeve of Ciri's jacket, murmuring a spell while stimulating an amulet to work. Not a trace remained of the hole. Ciri squealed with joy.
That's magic! I'm going to have a magical jacket! Wow!
Only until I make you an ordinary, but good one. Right? Now take all that off, young lady, and change into something else. These aren't your only clothes, surely?
Ciri shook her head, lifted the lid of the trunk, and showed her a faded loose dress, a dark grey tunic, a linen shirt, and a woolen blouse resembling a penitent sack.
This is mine, she said. This is what I came in. But I don't wear it now. It's woman's stuff.
I understand.
Triss grimaced mockingly. Woman's or not, for the time being you'll have to change into it.
Well, get on with it. Get undressed. Let me help you. Damn it! What's this, Ciri?
The girl's shoulders were covered in massive bruises, suffused with blood. Most of them had already turned yellow. Some were fresh.
What the hell is this?
The magician repeated angrily.
Who beat you like this?
This?
Ciri looked at her shoulders as if surprised by the number of bruises.
Oh, this? That was the windmill. I was too slow. What windmill? Bloody hell!
The windmill,
repeated Ciri, raising her huge eyes to look up at the magician.
It's a sort of... well... I'm using it to learn to dodge while attacking. It's got these paws made of sticks, and it turns and waves the paws. You have to jump very quickly and dodge. You have to learn a leaf rex. If you haven't got the leaf rex, the windmill wallops you with a stick. At the beginning, the windmill gave me a really terribly horrible thrashing, but now...
Take the leggings and shirt off.
Oh, sweet gods! Dear girl, can you really walk? Run?
Both hips and her left thigh were black and blue with hematomas and swellings. Ciri shuddered and hissed, pulling away from the magician's hand. Triss swore viciously in dwarvish, using inexpressibly foul language.
Was that the windmill too?
She asked, trying to remain calm.
This? No. This was the windmill.
Ciri pointed indifferently to an impressive bruise below her left knee, covering her shin.
And these other ones? They were the pendulum. I practice my fencing steps on the pendulum. Geralt says I'm already good at the pendulum. He says I've got... flair. I've got flair. And if you run out of flair?
Triss ground her teeth together.
I take it the pendulum thumps you.
But of course, the girl confirmed, looking at her, clearly surprised at this lack of knowledge.
It thumps you. And how? And here? On your side? What was that? A smith's hammer?
Ciri hissed with pain and blushed.
I fell off the comb. And the comb thumped you?
Finished Triss, controlling herself with increasing difficulty. Ciri snorted.
How can a comb thump you when it's buried in the ground? It can't. I just fell. I was practicing a jumping pirouette, and it didn't work. That's where the bruise came from, because I hit a post.
And you lay there for 2 days in pain, finding it hard to breathe?
Not at all. Go in and rubbed it, and put me straight back on the comb. You have to, you know, otherwise you catch fear.
What?
You catch fear?
Ciri repeated proudly, brushing her ashen fringe from her forehead.
Didn't you know? Even when something bad happens to you, you have to go straight back to that piece of equipment, or you get frightened. And if you're frightened, you'll be hopeless at the exercise. You mustn't give up. Geralt said so.
I have to remember that maxim,
the enchantress murmured through her teeth. And that it came from Geralt.
Not a bad prescription for life, although I'm not sure it applies in every situation. But it is easy to put it into practice at someone else's expense. So you mustn't give up. Even though you're being thumped and beaten in 1,000 ways, you're to get up and carry on practicing. Of course, a witch is not afraid of anything.
Is that so?
And you, Ciri, you aren't afraid of anything?
Answer truthfully. The girl turned away and bit her lip.
You wouldn't tell anybody?
I won't.
I'm frightened of two pendulums. Two at the same time. And the windmill, but only when it's set to go fast. And there's also a long balance. I still have to go on that. With a safety device. Lambert says I'm a sissy and a wimp. But that's not true. Geralt told me my weight is distributed a little differently because I'm a girl. I've simply got to practice more unless... I wanted to ask you something. May I?
You may.
If you know magic and spells, if you can cast them, can you turn me into a boy?
No, Triss replied in an icy tone. I can't. The little witcher girl was clearly troubled.
But could you at least...
At least what?
Could you do something so I don't have to...
Ciri blushed.
I'll whisper it in your ear.
Go on. Triss leaned over.
I'm listening.
Ciri, growing even redder, brought her head closer to the enchantress's chestnut hair. Triss sat up abruptly, her eyes flaming.
Today? Now?
Hell and bloody damnation!
The enchantress yelled, and kicked the stool so hard that it hit the door and brought down the ratskin.
Pox, plague, shit and leprosy! I'm gonna kill those cursed idiots!
Calm down, Marigold, said Lambert. It's unhealthy to get so worked up, especially with no reason.
Don't preach at me, and stop calling me Marigold. But best of all, stop talking altogether. I'm not speaking to you. Vesemir, Geralt, have any of you seen how terribly battered this child is? She hasn't got a single healthy spot on her body.
Dear child, said Vesemir gravely, don't let yourself get carried away by your emotions. You were brought up differently. You've seen children being brought up in another way. Ciri comes from the south, where girls and boys are brought up in the same way, like the elves. She was put on a pony when she was 5, and when she was 8, she was already riding out hunting. She was taught to use a bow, javelin, and sword. A bruise is nothing new to Ciri.
Don't give me that nonsense, Triss flared. Don't pretend you're stupid. This is not some pony, or horse, or sleigh ride. This is Caer Morhen. On these windmills and pendulums of yours, on this killer path of yours, dozens of boys have broken their bones and twisted their necks. Boys who were hard, seasoned vagabonds like you, found on roads and pulled out of gutters. Sinewy scamps and good-for-nothings, pretty experienced despite their short lives. What chance has Ciri got? Even though she's been brought up in the south with elven methods, even growing up under the hand of a battle-axe like Lioness Calanthe, that little one was, and still is, a princess. Delicate skin, slight build, light bones. She's a girl. What do you want to turn her into, a witcher?
That girl, said Geralt, quietly and calmly. That petite, delicate princess lived through the massacre of Sintra. Left entirely to her own devices, she stole past Nilfgaard's cohorts. She successfully fled the marauders who prowled the villages, plundering and murdering anything that still lived. She survived on her own for 2 weeks in the forests of Transriver, entirely alone. She spent a month roaming with a pack of fugitives, slogging as hard as all the others and starving like all the others. For almost half a year, having been taken in by a peasant family, she worked on the land and with the livestock. Believe me, Triss, life has tried, seasoned, and hardened her no less than good-for-nothings like us, who were brought to Caer Morhen from the highways. Ciri is no weaker than unwanted bastards like us, who are left with witches in taverns like kittens in a wicker basket. And her gender? What difference does that make?
You still ask? You still dare ask that? Yelled the magician. What difference does it make? Only that the girl, not being like you, has her days, and bears them exceptionally badly, and you wanted to tear her lungs out on the killer and some bloody windmills?
Despite her outrage, Triss felt an exquisite satisfaction at the sight of the sheepish expressions of the young witches and Vesemir's jaw suddenly dropping open.
You didn't even know?
She nodded in what was now a calm, concerned and gentle reproach.
You're pathetic guardians.
She's ashamed to tell you because she was taught not to mention such complaints to men. And she's ashamed of the weakness, the pain, and the fact that she is less fit. Has any one of you thought about that? Taken any interest in it? Or tried to guess what might be the matter with her? Maybe her very first bleed happened here, in Caer Morhen? And she cried to herself at night, unable to find any sympathy, consolation, or even understanding from anyone? Has any one of you given it any thought whatsoever?
Stop it, Triss, moaned Geralt quietly. That's enough. You've achieved what you wanted, and maybe even more.
The devil take it, cursed Cohen. We've turned out to be right idiots. There's no two ways about it, eh, Vesemir? And you?
Silence, growled the old witcher. Not a word.
It was Eskel's behaviour which was most unlikely. He got up, approached the enchantress, bent down low, took her hand and kissed it respectfully. She swiftly withdrew her hand, not so as to demonstrate her anger and annoyance, but to break the pleasant, piercing vibration triggered by the witcher's touch. Eskel emanated powerfully, more powerfully than Geralt.
Triss, he said, rubbing the hideous scar on his cheek with embarrassment. Help us. We ask you. Help us, Triss.
The enchantress looked him in the eye and pursed her lips.
With what? What am I to help you with, Eskel?
Eskel rubbed his cheek again, looking at Geralt.
The white-haired witcher bowed his head, hiding his eyes behind his hand. Vesemir cleared his throat loudly.
At that moment, the door creaked open, and Ciri entered the hall. Vesemir's hawking changed into something like a wheeze, a loud, indrawn breath. Lambert opened his mouth. Triss suppressed a laugh. Ciri, her hair cut and styled, was walking towards them with tiny steps, carefully holding up a dark blue dress, shortened and adjusted, and still showing the signs of having been carried in a saddlebag. Another present from the enchantress gleamed around the girl's neck, a little black viper made of lacquered leather, with a ruby eye and gold clasp. Ciri stopped in front of Vesemir. Not quite knowing what to do with her hands, she planted her thumbs behind her belt.
I cannot dream today,
she recited in the utter silence, slowly and emphatically.
For I am...
She looked at the enchantress. Triss winked at her, smirking like a rascal, well pleased with his mischief, and moved her lips to prompt the memorized lines.
Indisposed,
ended Ciri loudly and proudly, turning her nose up almost to the ceiling. Vesemir hawked again. But Eskel, dear Eskel, kept his head and once more behaved as was fitting.
Of course, he said casually, smiling. We understand, and clearly we will postpone your exercises until your indisposition has passed. We will also cut the theory short, and if you feel unwell, we will put it aside for the time being too. If you need any medication or...
I'll take care of that,
Triss cut in just as casually.
Aha!
Only now did Ciri blush a little. She looked at the old witcher.
Uncle Vesemir, I've asked Triss, that is, Miss Merigold, to, that is, well, to stay here with us, for longer, for a long time. But Triss said you have to agree forsooth. Uncle Vesemir, say yes.
I agree, Vesemir wheezed out. Of course I agree.
We are very happy.
Only now did Geralt take his hand from his forehead.
We are extremely pleased, Triss.
The enchantress nodded slightly towards him and innocently fluttered her eyelashes, winding a chestnut lock around her finger. Geralt's face seemed almost graven from stone.
You behaved very properly and politely, Ciri, he said, offering Miss Merigold our ongoing hospitality in Caer Morhen. I am proud of you.
Ciri reddened and smiled broadly. The enchantress gave her the next prearranged sign.
And now, said the girl,
turning her nose up even higher.
I will leave you alone, because you no doubt wish to talk over various important matters with Triss. Miss Merigold? Uncle Vesemir? Gentlemen? I bid you goodbye. For the time being.
She curtsied gracefully, then left the hall, walking up the stairs slowly and with dignity.
Bloody hell!
Lambert broke the silence. To think I didn't believe that she really is a princess!
Have you understood, you idiots?
Vesemir cast his eye around.
If she puts a dress on in the morning, I don't want to see any exercises. Understood?
Eskel and Cohen bestowed a look which was entirely devoid of respect on the old man. Lambert snorted loudly. Geralt stared at the Enchantress, and the Enchantress smiled back.
Thank you, he said. Thank you, Triss.
Conditions?
Eskel was clearly worried.
But we've already promised to ease Ciri's training, Triss. What other conditions do you want to impose?
Well, maybe conditions isn't a very nice phrase, so let us call it advice. I will give you 3 pieces of advice, and you are going to abide by each of them. If, of course, you really want me to stay and help you bring up the little one.
We're listening, said Geralt. Go on, Triss.
Above all, she began, smiling maliciously, Ciri's menu is to be more varied, and the secret mushrooms and mysterious greens in particular have to be limited.
Geralt and Cohen controlled their expressions wonderfully, Lambert and Eskel a little less so, Vesemir not at all.
But then, she thought, looking at his comically embarrassed expression, in his days the world was a better place. Duplicity was a character flaw to be ashamed of. Sincerity did not bring shame. Fewer infusions of your mystery-shrouded herbs, she continued, trying not to giggle, and more milk. You have goats here. Milking is no great art. You'll see, Lambert. You'll learn how to do it in no time.
Triss, started Geralt. Listen.
No, you listen. You haven't subjected Sue to violent mutations, haven't touched her hormones, haven't tried any elixirs or grasses on her. And that's to be praised. That was sensible, responsible, and humane. You haven't harmed her with any of your poisons. All the more so, you must not cripple her now.
What are you talking about?
The mushrooms, whose secrets you guard so carefully, she explained, do indeed keep the girl wonderfully fit and strengthen her muscles. The herbs guarantee an ideal metabolic rate and hasten her development. All this, taken together and helped along by grueling training, causes certain changes in her build, in her adipose tissue. She's a woman. And as you haven't crippled her hormonal system, do not cripple her physically now. She might hold it against you later, if you so ruthlessly deprive her of her womanly attributes. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Andal,
muttered Lambert, brazenly eyeing Triss's breasts, which strained against the fabric of her dress. Eskil cleared his throat and looked daggers at the young witcher.
At the moment, Geralt asked slowly, also gliding his eyes over this and that. You haven't noticed anything irreversible in her, I hope?
No. She smiled. Fortunately not. She is developing healthily and normally, and is built like a young dryad. It's a pleasure to look at her. But I ask you to be moderate in using your accelerants.
We will, promised Vesemir. Thank you for the warning, child. What else? You said 3 pieces of advice?
Indeed. This is the 2nd. Ciri must not be allowed to grow wild. She has to have contact with the world, with her peers. She has to be decently educated and prepared for a normal life. Let her wave her sword about for the time being. You won't turn her into a witcher without mutation anyway. But having a witcher's training won't harm her. Times are hard and dangerous. She'll be able to defend herself when necessary, like an elf. But you must not bury her alive here in the middle of nowhere. She has to enter normal life.
Her normal life went up in flames along with Sintra, murmured Geralt. But regarding this, Triss, as usual, you're right. We've already thought about it. In spring, I'm going to take her to the temple school, to Nenica, to Elender.
That's a very good idea and a wise decision.
Neneca is an exceptional woman, and Goddess Melitela's sanctuary an exceptional place. Safe, sure, and it guarantees an appropriate education for the girl. Does Ciri know yet?
She does. She kicked up a fuss for a few days, but finally accepted the idea. Now she's even looking forward to spring with impatience, excited by the prospect of an expedition to Temeria. She's interested in the world.
So was I at her age. Triss smiled. And that comparison brings us dangerously close to the third piece of advice, the most important piece. And you already know what it is. Don't pull silly faces. I'm a magician, have you forgotten? I don't know how long it took you to recognise Ciri's magical abilities. It took me less than half an hour. After that, I knew who, or rather what, the girl is.
And what is she?
A source.
That's impossible.
It's possible. Certain, even. Ciri is a source, and has mediumistic powers. What is more, these powers are very, very worrying. And you, my dear witches, are perfectly well aware of this. You've noticed these powers, and they have worried you too. That is the one and only reason you brought me here to Kaer Morhen. Am I right? The one and only reason?
Yes, Vesemir confirmed after a moment's silence.
Triss breathed an imperceptible sigh of relief. For a moment, she was afraid that Geralt would be the one to confirm it. The first snow fell the following day. Fine snowflakes initially, but soon turning into a blizzard. It fell throughout the night, and in the early morning, the walls of Kaer Morhen were drowned beneath a snowdrift. There could be no question of running the killer, especially since Ciri was still not feeling very well. Triss suspected that the witch's accelerants might be the cause of the girl's menstrual problems. She could not be sure, however, knowing practically nothing about the drugs, and Ciri was, beyond doubt, the only girl in the world to whom they had been administered. She did not share her suspicions with the witches. She did not want to worry or annoy them, and preferred to apply her own methods. She gave Ciri elixirs to drink, tied a string of active jaspers around her waist, under her dress, and forbade her to exert herself in any way, especially by chasing around wildly hunting rats with a sword. Ciri was bored. She roamed the castle sleepily and, finally, for lack of any other amusement, joined Cohen, who was cleaning the stable, grooming the horses, and repairing a harness. Geralt, to the enchantress's rage, disappeared somewhere and appeared only towards evening, bearing a dead goat. Triss helped him skin his prey. Although she sincerely detested the smell of meat and blood, she wanted to be near the Witcher. Near him. As near as possible. A cold, determined resolution was growing in her. She did not want to sleep alone any longer.
Triss!
Yelled Ciri suddenly, running down the stairs, stamping. Can I sleep with you tonight? Triss, please! Please say yes! Please, Triss!
The snow fell and fell. It brightened up only with the arrival of Midinvian, the day of the winter equinox.
On the third day, all the children died save one, a male barely 10. Hitherto agitated by a sudden madness, he fell all at once into deep stupor. His eyes took on a glassy gaze. Incessantly with his hands did he clutch at clothing, or brandish them in the air as if desirous of catching a quill. His breathing grew loud and hoarse. Sweat, cold, clammy and malodorous appeared on his skin. Then was he once more given elixir through the vein, and the seizure it did return. This time a nosebleed did ensue, coughing turned to vomiting, after which the male weakened entirely and became inert. For 2 days more did symptoms not subside. The child's skin, hitherto drenched in sweat, grew dry and hot. The pulse ceased to be full and firm, albeit remaining of average strength, slow rather than fast. No more did he wake, nor did he scream. Finally came the seventh day. The male awoke and opened his eyes, and his eyes were as those of a viper. Carla Demisia Crest, The Trial of Grasses and Other Secret Witcher Practices, seen with my own eyes. Manuscript exclusively accessible to the Chapter of Wizards. Chapter 3
Your fears were unfounded, entirely ungrounded.
Triss grimaced,
resting her elbows on the table. The time when wizards used to hunt sources and magically gifted children, tearing them from their parents or guardians by force or deceit, is long gone. Did you really think I might want to take Ciri away from you? Lambert snorted and turned his face away. Eskil and Vesemir looked at Geralt, and Geralt said nothing. He continued to gaze off to the side, playing incessantly with his silver witcher medallion, depicting the head of a snarling wolf. Triss knew the medallion reacted to magic. On such a night as Midinvierne, when the air itself was vibrating with magic, the witcher's medallions must be practically humming. It must be both irritating and bothersome.
"No, child," Vesemir finally said. "We know you would not do such a thing. But we also know that you do, ultimately, have to tell the chapter about her. We've known for a long time that every wizard, male or female, is burdened with this duty. You don't take talented children from their parents and guardians anymore. You observe such children so that later, at the right moment, you can fascinate them in magic, influence them."
"Have no fear," she interrupted coldly. "I will not tell anyone about Ciri, not even the chapter. Why are you looking at me like that?"
"We're amazed by the ease with which you pledge to keep this secret," said Eskil calmly. "Forgive me, Triss. I do not mean to offend you, but what has happened to your legendary loyalty to the Council and Chapter?"
"A lot has happened. The war changed many things, and the battle for Sodden Hill changed even more. I won't bore you with the politics, especially as certain issues and affairs are bound by secrets I am not allowed to divulge. But as for loyalty, I am loyal, and believe me, in this matter, I can be loyal to both you and to the chapter."
"Such double loyalty."
Geralt looked her in the eyes for the first time that evening. "It's devilishly difficult to manage. Rarely does it succeed, Triss." The Enchantress turned her gaze on Ciri. The girl was sitting on a bearskin with Coen, tucked away in the far corner of the hall, and both were busy playing a hand-slapping game. The game was growing monotonous, as both were incredibly quick. Neither could manage to slap the other's hand in any way. This, however, clearly neither mattered to them nor spoiled their game.
"Geralt," she said, "when you found Ciri on the Yaruga, you took her with you. You brought her to Kaer Morhen, hid her from the world, and do not let even those closest to the child know she is alive. You did this because something, about which I know nothing, convinced you that destiny exists, holds sway over us, and guides us in everything we do. I think the same, and have always done so. If destiny wants Ciri to become a magician, she will become one. Neither the chapter nor the council have to know about her. They don't have to observe or encourage her. So, in keeping your secret, I won't betray the chapter in any way. But, as you know, there is something of a hitch here."
"Were it only one," sighed Vesemir. "Go on, child."
"The girl has magical abilities, and that can't be neglected. It's too dangerous."
"In what way?"
"Uncontrolled powers are an ominous thing, for both the source and those in their vicinity. The source can threaten those around them in many ways, but they threaten themselves in only one. Mental illness, usually catatonia."
"Devil take it," said Lambert after a long silence. "I am listening to you, half convinced that someone here has already lost their marbles and will any moment now present a threat to the rest of us. Destiny, sources, spells, hocus pocus. Aren't you exaggerating, Merigold? Is this the first child to be brought to the keep? Geralt didn't find destiny. He found another homeless orphaned child. We'll teach the girl the sword and let her out into the world like the others. True, I admit we've never trained a girl in Kaer Morhen before. We've had some problems with Ciri, made mistakes, and it's a good thing you've pointed them out to us. But don't let us exaggerate. She's not so remarkable as to make us fall on our knees and raise our eyes to the heavens. Is there a lack of female warriors roaming the world? I assure you, Merigold, Ciri will leave here skillful and healthy, strong and able to face life. And, I warrant, without catatonia or any other epilepsy, unless you delude her into believing she has some such disease. Vesemir." Triss turned in her chair. "Tell him to keep quiet. He's getting in the way." "You think you know it all," said Lambert calmly. "But you don't. Not yet. Look." He stretched his hand towards the hearth, arranging his fingers together in a strange way. The chimney roared and howled. The flames burst out violently. The glowing embers grew brighter and rained sparks. Geralt, Vesemir and Eskil glanced at Ciri anxiously, but the girl paid no attention to the spectacular fireworks. Triss folded her arms and looked at Lambert defiantly.
"The sign of Ard," she stated calmly. "Did you think to impress me? With the use of the same sign, strengthened through concentration, willpower and a spell, I can blow the logs from the chimney in a moment and blast them so high you will think they are stars."
"You can," he agreed. "But Ciri can't. She can't form the sign of Ard, or any other sign. She has tried hundreds of times to no effect. And you know our signs require minimal power. Ciri does not even have that. She is an absolutely normal child. She has not the least magical power. She has, in fact, a comprehensive lack of ability. And here you are telling us she's a source, trying to threaten us. A source," she explained coldly, "has no control over their skills, no command over them. They are a medium, something like a transmitter. Unknowingly, they get in touch with energy. Unknowingly, they convert it. And when they try to control it, when they strain, trying to form the signs, perhaps, nothing comes of it. And nothing will come of it. Not just after hundreds of attempts, but after thousands. It is one characteristic of a source. Then, one day, a moment comes when the source does not exert itself, does not strain, is daydreaming or thinking about cabbage and sausages, playing dice, enjoying themselves in bed with a partner, picking their nose. And suddenly, something happens. A house might go up in flames, or sometimes half a town goes up." "You're exaggerating, Merigold. Lambert!" Geralt released his medallion and rested his hands on the table. "First, stop calling Triss Merigold. She has asked you a number of times not to. Second, Triss is not exaggerating. I saw Ciri's mother, Princess Pavetta, in action with my own eyes. I tell you, it was really something. I don't know if she was a source or not, but no one suspected she had any power at all, until, save by a hair's breadth, she almost reduced the royal castle of Sintra to ashes." "We should assume, therefore," said Eskil, lighting the candles in yet another candlestick, "that Ciri could indeed be genetically burdened."
"Not only could," said Vesemir, "she is so burdened. On the one hand, Lambert is right. Ciri is not capable of forming signs. On the other, we have all seen."
He fell silent and looked at Ciri, who, with a joyful squeal, acknowledged that she had the upper hand in the game. Triss spied a small smile on Cohen's face and was sure he had allowed her to win.
"Precisely," she sneered. "You have all seen. What have you seen? Under what circumstances did you see it? Don't you think, boys, that the time has come for more truthful confessions? Hell, I repeat, I will keep your secret. You have my word."
Lambert glanced at Geralt. Geralt nodded in assent. The younger witcher stood and took a large rectangular crystal carafe and a smaller phial from a high shelf. He poured the contents of the phial into the carafe, shook it several times, and poured the transparent liquid into the chalices on the table. "Have a drink with us, Triss."
"Is the truth so terrible," she mocked,
"that we can't talk about it soberly? Do I have to get drunk in order to hear it?" "Don't be such a know-all. Take a sip. You'll find it easier to understand."
"What is it?"
"White Seagull."
"What?"
"A mild remedy," Eskil smiled, "for pleasant dreams."
"Damn it! A witcher hallucinogenic? That's why your eyes shine like that in the evenings."
"White Seagull is very gentle. It's Black Seagull that is hallucinogenic."
"If there's magic in this liquid, I'm not allowed to take it."
"Exclusively natural ingredients," Geralt reassured her, but he looked, she noticed, disconcerted. He was clearly afraid she would question them about the elixir's ingredients, and diluted with a great deal of water. "We would not offer you anything that could harm you." The sparkling liquid, with its strange taste, struck her throat with its chill, and then dispersed warmth throughout her body. The magician ran her tongue over her gums and palate. She was unable to recognize any of the ingredients.
"You gave Ciri some of this seagull to drink," she surmised.
"And then?" "It was an accident," Geralt interrupted quickly.
That first evening, just after we arrived, she was thirsty, and the seagull stood on the table. Before we had time to react, she had drunk it all in one go, and fallen into a trance.
"We had such a fright," Besomir admitted and sighed. "Oh, that we did, child. More than we could take."
"She started speaking with another voice," the magician stated calmly, looking at the witch's eyes gleaming in the candlelight. "She started talking about events and matters of which she could have no knowledge. She started to prophesy. Right? What did she say?"
"Rubbish," said Lambert dryly. "Senseless drivel."
"Then I have no doubt," she looked straight at him, "that you understood each other perfectly well. Drivel is your speciality, and I'm further convinced of it every time you open your mouth. Do me a great favour, and don't open it for a while, all right?"
"This once," said Eskil gravely, rubbing the scar across his cheek. "Lambert is right, Driss. After drinking Siegel, Ciri really was incomprehensible. That first time it was gibberish. Only after..."
He broke off.
Triss shook her head.
"It was only the second time that she started talking sense," she guessed. "So there was a second time, too. Also after she drank a drug because of your carelessness."
"Triss!" Geralt raised his head. "This is not the time for your childish spitefulness. It doesn't amuse us. It worries and upsets us. Yes, there was a second time, too, and a third. Ciri fell, quite by accident, during an exercise. She lost consciousness. When she regained it, she had fallen into another trance. And once again she spoke nonsense. Again, it was not her voice. And again, it was incomprehensible. But I have heard similar voices before, heard a similar way of speaking. It's how those poor, sick, demented women known as oracles speak. You see what I'm thinking?"
"Clearly. That was the second time. Get to the third."
Geralt wiped his brow, suddenly beaded with sweat, on his forearm. "Ciri often wakes up at night," he continued, "shouting. She has been through a lot. She doesn't want to talk about it, but it is clear that she saw things no child should see in Sintra and Angren. I even fear that someone harmed her. It comes back to her in dreams. Usually she is easy to reassure and she falls asleep without any problem. But once, after waking, she was in a trance again. She again spoke with someone else's unpleasant, menacing voice. She spoke clearly and made sense. She prophesied, foresaw the future. And what she foretold..."
"What? What, Geralt?"
"Death," Vesemir said gently. "Death, child." Triss glanced at Ciri, who was shrilly accusing Cohen of cheating. Cohen put his arms around her and burst out laughing. The magician suddenly realized that she had never, up until now, heard any of the witches laugh.
"For whom?" she asked briefly, still gazing at Cohen.
"Him," said Vesemir. "And me," Geralt added, and smiled.
"When she woke up?"
"She remembered nothing, and we didn't ask her any questions."
"Quite so. As to the prophecy, was it specific? Detailed?"
"No." Geralt looked her straight in the eyes. "Confused. Don't ask about it, Triss. We're not worried by the contents of Ciri's prophecies and ravings, but about what happens to her. We're not afraid for ourselves, but careful," warned Vesemir. "Don't talk about it in front of her." Cohen approached the table, carrying the girl piggyback.
"Wish everybody good night, Ciri," he said. "Say good night to those night elves. We're going to sleep. It's nearly midnight. In a minute, it'll be the end of Midinviern. As of tomorrow, every day brings spring closer."
"I'm thirsty."
Ciri slipped off his back and reached for Eskil's chalice. Eskil deftly moved the vessel beyond her reach and grabbed a jug of water. Triss stood quickly.
"Here you are."
She gave her half-full chalice to the girl while meaningfully squeezing Geralt's arm and looking Vesemir in the eye. "Drink."
"Triss," whispered Eskil, watching Ciri drink greedily. "What are you doing?"
"It's not a word, please."
They did not have to wait long for it to take effect. Ciri suddenly grew rigid, cried out,
and smiled a broad, happy smile. She squeezed her eyelids shut and stretched out her arms. She laughed, spun a pirouette and danced on tiptoes. Lambert moved the stool away in a flash, leaving Cohen standing between the dancing girl and the hearth. Triss jumped up and tore an amulet from her pouch, a sapphire set in silver on a thin chain. She squeezed it tightly in her hand.
"Child," groaned Vesemir, "what are you doing?"
"I know what I'm doing," she said sharply. "Ciri has fallen into a trance, and I am going to contact her psychically. I am going to enter her. I told you, she is something like a magical transmitter. I've got to know what she is transmitting, how, and from where she is drawing the aura, how she is transforming it. It's Midinvian, a favourable night for such an undertaking."
"I don't like it."
Geralt frowned.
"I don't like it at all."
"Should either of us suffer an epileptic fit," the magician said, ignoring his words, "you know what to do. A stick between our teeth, hold us down, wait for it to pass. Gin up, boys. I've done this before."
Ciri ceased dancing, sank to her knees, extended her arms, and rested her head on her lap. Triss pressed the now warm amulet to her temple and murmured the formula of a spell. She closed her eyes, concentrated her willpower, and gave out a burst of magic. The sea roared. Waves thundered against the rocky shore and exploded in high geysers amidst the boulders. She flapped her wings, chasing the salty wind. Indescribably happy, she dived, caught up with a flock of her companions, brushed the crests of the waves with her claws, soared into the sky again, shedding water droplets, and glided, tossed by the gale, whistling through her pin feathers.
"Force of suggestion," she thought soberly. "It is only force of suggestion, seagull."
"Triss! Triss!"
"Ciri? Where are you?"
"Triss!"
The cry of the seagull ceased. The magician still felt the wet splash of the breakers, but the sea was no longer below her. Or it was, but it was a sea of grass, an endless plateau stretching as far as the horizon. Triss, with horror, realized she was looking at the view from the top of Sodden Hill. But it was not the hill. It could not be the hill. The sky suddenly grew dark. Shadows swirled around her. She saw a long column of indistinct figures slowly climbing down the mountainside. She heard murmurs superimposed over each other, mingling into an uncanny, incomprehensible chorus. Ciri was standing nearby with her back turned to her. The wind was blowing her ashen hair about. The indistinct, hazy figures continued past in a long, unending column. Passing her, they turned their heads. Triss suppressed a cry, watching the listless, peaceful faces and their dead, unseeing eyes. She did not know all of the faces, did not recognize them, but some of them she did know. Coral, Vaniel, Yol, pox-marked Axel.
"Why have you brought me here?" she whispered. "Why?"
Ciri turned. She raised her arm, and the magician saw a trickle of blood run down her lifeline, across her palm and onto her wrist.
"It is the rose," the girl said calmly. "The rose of Shirwaith. I pricked myself. It is nothing. It is only blood. The blood of elves."
The sky grew even darker, then a moment later flared with the sharp, blinding glare of lightning. Everything froze in the silence and stillness. Triss took a step, wanting to make sure she could. She stopped next to Ciri and saw that both of them stood on the edge of a bottomless chasm where reddish smoke, glowing as though it was lit from behind, was swirling. The flash of another soundless bolt of lightning suddenly revealed a long marble staircase leading into the depths of the abyss.
"It has to be this way," Ciri said in a shaky voice. "There is no other. Only this. Then the stairs. It has to be this way, because... Va is the Riath Ip Igian?"
"Speak," whispered the magician.
"Speak, child." "The child of elder blood. Fianavith. Lunad Ip Hain Ihir. Deathwen. The white flame. No, no, no. Ciri, the black knight, with feathers in his helmet. What did he do to me? What happened?
I was frightened. I'm still frightened. It's not ended. It will never end. The lion cub must die.